You ready?
Ready?
Ready? Ready? Watch out, Frank!
Podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we cover nothing but sports for the duration of the show. I am your host, Steve Kent, and I am joined currently by Lou. We have a lot of stuff to get to tonight. We have MLB free agency underway and there was one big signing that I know of, but a couple of other signings have also occurred as well so far this week. We also have the college coaching carousel to talk about. We have some, I believe, some upsets as well to discuss in college football. We got Antonio Brown. We got, probably an hour worth of a rant by me on Matt Patricia to get to as well. and a whole bunch of other stuff. I believe we have Diane as well with us currently.
Yes, we do.
So why don't we get to it? First off, we're going to discuss the World Cup because currently we are down to the knockout round and our first two teams officially eliminated have been the United States and Australia at the hands of the Netherlands and Argentina. First off, with the United States, the Netherlands knocked off the United States 3-1 today off of goals by Denzel Dump, Daily Blind, and Memphis Depay, or Depay, however they pronounce it there.
He just called Memphis.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Just Memphis then.
Right.
And the USA, their lone goal came from Haji Wright towards the end of the second half. So here's the problem with the United States. How they got to where they ended up. They started off with a tie over against Wales 1-1. They ended up tying England in a scoreless tie, 0-0, which shocked everybody. And then they ended up narrowly defeating Iran by a score of 1-0.
Right.
In order to advance to the knockout stage, the knockout round, where unfortunately they fell to the Netherlands. And the Netherlands, Lou, was actually dealing with the flu in the lead up to this World Cup matchup.
They still won anyway.
Let's just get right to the point, Lou. What went wrong with the United States for them to
They have good
to
defense, but they
early?
Didn't have the right offense for it. I mean, the offense was just too tough for us to handle. And, of course, you know, with the Netherlands being, you know, the powerhouse that they are, sort of, you know, it made it very, very tough for it. And, of course, with the injury to our star player, that kind of sets back a bit as well. So there was a number of factors that, you know, played into it, and it got the best of us.
Yeah, there was definitely a number of factors. I will say though, Pulisic did play today.
Pulisic,
so
yes, he did.
It's not like the injury kept him out of the game. He did play. I don't think anybody expected the USA to even beat the Netherlands anyways, considering even though the United States had 58% possession to finish the game. So the United States actually won the possession game. They just didn't win the scoring game between both clubs. Diane, did you get a chance to watch any of the World Cup?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I definitely missed today's game because, let's face it, I was passed out still at the time. I mean, 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock on a weekend, you're not going to be seeing me waking up early in order to watch a soccer game. But I did catch the replay, and here's my problem with this year's USA club. I felt they were missing quite a few players that could have helped produce. I mean, if they want to focus on defense, I think Brandon Bye probably would have been a good selection to pick off of on the defensive side, and he ended up being left out. There were a few others. Not saying I disagree with Matt Turner as you know, goalkeeper. I don't disagree with that at all. However, I do think that there were quite a few that could have been brought up, like Zach Steffen for one, who plays in Manchester City. I'm kind of surprised that considering Steffen is Bearhalter's guy when it comes to goalkeepers. As a matter of fact, I believe he played under Berhalter when he was in Major League Soccer, I think. So I'm kind of surprised that he didn't take Zach Steffen. There were a few others too that were kind of surprising. Ricardo Pepi was somehow left off of the roster this year, which a lot of people felt that they really could have used Pepi, but I think he was left off of the roster for Jesus Ferreira. Either Ferreira or maybe it was Aronson that he was left off of the roster for. But you know, the real problem that I saw with this game, though, is that they didn't start Carter Vickers on defense, and they didn't start start Gio Reyna, period, at all this entire World Cup. And I'll tell you one thing, Ferreira, he looked completely lost out there
at the striker
position. He looked completely lost. As soon as they replaced him at halftime with Gio Reyna, all of a sudden the offense started to get going. And you know, I told you guys this last week. If they're gonna have any shot of competing, they would need to start to incorporate skill into the game, into their roster. Putting in Gio Reyna and putting in Carter Vickers would have provided skill. They chose not to do that. So ultimately they deserve what they ended up getting. And in all honesty, Lou, I would not be surprised at all if Berhalter gets fired because of this.
Neither would I.
I mean, hell, they fired Bruce Arena for not qualifying for the knockout round last World Cup.
Right.
But I guarantee you, Arena probably wouldn't have made the same stupid decisions that Berhalter made. I mean, Bruce Arena, granted, it's completely different in MLS, but Bruce Arena has actually won an MLS Cup.
That's true. To be clear, for our side.
You know, that's why I guess it was kind of surprising that, they didn't really do much under Arena, and that ultimately caused him to get get fired as the U.S. men's national team head coach. But now, though, I mean, Berhalter, he last coached before he became the men's national team coach. He last coached for the Columbus Crew SC in Major League Soccer. And so far as coach for the men's national team, which he was hired in 2018, he's 37 wins, 12 draws, and 11 losses. We have a goal differential of plus 77, which, you know, is pretty good. But I guess it has to be because of – maybe it's because some of these players are still getting are still growing up. I mean, this was a pretty young squad that they put out there this year.
Youngest ever, I think, isn't it?
I think it was. So I don't know. You know, maybe it's because they were a young squad. But still, I mean, better decision making could have been had by Berhalter. And actually, I was wrong. Berhalter actually did win an MLS Cup. He won the MLS Cup as a player for the LA Galaxy back in 2011, before he retired.
That long ago? Wow.
Yeah, that long ago. He retired in 2011, and then he went on to coach Hammarby out in Sweden.
I forgot about that.
Meanwhile, over in the other matchup, Argentina with a 2-1 victory over Australia, off of goals by Julian Alvarez and Lionel Messi, with Australia getting a goal. It was actually an own goal by Enzo Fernandez, the goalkeeper for Argentina. So that ended up being 2-1. So Argentina will now move on to face the Netherlands in the quarterfinals of the World Cup. And if I can bring up the thing here, our next matchups, we have Japan and Croatia and Brazil and South Korea. And there's actually something tying into Brazil here, actually, if I can bring it up here. Brazil, they may have Neymar back. However, they will be without Gabriel Jesus, and they will also be without Alex Telles for the rest of the World Cup due to injury. In particular, Telles had to be substituted in the 54th minute, with Jesus then leaving the pitch 10 minutes later when Brazil lost to Cameroon on yesterday, actually. They ended up undergoing tests this morning, and an MRI on their right knees confirmed the extent of the injuries and the impossibility of recovery in time to participate in the World Cup, according to a statement that was made. It's also a huge blow for Team Brazil because Jesus' Arsenal are on the top of the Premier League, and they're going to want their star striker fit for when the competition resumes after the World Cup. So that's why he's being held out. And Telles is on loan at Sevilla from Manchester United. So it looks like this is basically more along the lines of stars or clubs trying to protect their stars, basically.
Do all clubs try and do that, soccer?
Well, mostly.
Yeah. Both of their clubs, from what it sounds like Arsenal of the Premier League and Sevilla are both making the decision to have both Gabriel Jesus and Alex Telles sit out of the rest of the World Cup. That's what it sounds like here, Diane, because of these injuries. Mm-hmm. Because when you think about it, the World Cup is only just during a certain time frame. These teams want to make sure that these players are good to go for when the World Cup ends, and everything resumes. Seasons in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
England's top soccer league, by the way, Diane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the top soccer league, just like how the NHL is the top hockey league in the
right.
in the world.
I'm sure you know that I don't really follow soccer.
Well, we do have a few other soccer things here. First, Neymar did return for Team Brazil to training on the pitch for the first time since he suffered an ankle injury in Brazil's 2-0 win over Serbia. He warmed up with his teammates and participated in drills before doing specific recovery work, which was accompanied by strength coach Ricardo Rosa today. It sounds like his availability against South Korea is questionable. However, if he can't play, looks like center back Marquinhos could switch to the left, and 39-year-old Dani Alves became the oldest Brazilian to start a World Cup match against Cameroon, could be tried out on the right side. However, it says if Tite opts to use Real Madrid center back Eder Militao as a fullback, as he did in the absence of Danilo against Switzerland, Brazil would have no other defenders to sit on the bench. So these two injuries could actually serve as a pretty big deal for Brazil moving forward, the longer that they go into this World Cup.
And this in Brazil is good?
Yes. They're considered to be one of the favorites for this year.
Okay.
They're considered to be one of the favorites.
Okay.
Yeah. Teams, honestly, Lou, the teams I'm looking at right now, I'm looking at Argentina. I was looking at Brazil, but before these two injuries, now I don't know where they might sit.
Yeah, taken out of it. Mm.
I mean, I'm assuming Argentina will beat Netherlands, which in that case they would probably then match up against Brazil in the semifinal.
Ooh, it's going to be good.
On the other side, you know, we have England and Senegal. We have France and Poland. We have Morocco and Spain.
Senegal.
And we have Portugal and Switzerland. Yeah, Senegal is the first round matchup for England.
Yeah.
So honestly, from what
that team.
Right. And, you know, from what it looks like here, honestly, I think we may get a semifinal matchup on this side of the – on the other side of the bracket here. We may get a semifinal matchup of England against Portugal, I'm kind of thinking.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. If only David
Beckham
was
going to retire. How long does the World Cup go on
until? Until the 18th of December.
Okay,
it's almost over.
2 more weeks.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's almost over.
Right, halfway there.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, Lou, basically from what we're seeing here with two teams already eliminated, the United States and Australia, I got to think that it's – if you're looking at potential favorites for a World Cup final matchup, I would say probably Argentina and, you know, maybe England, because there's been so much hype around England this year for some reason.
They haven't won since what? When was the last time they did win, actually? Been a while.
It's been quite a while, I think, that they've won. Let me look at the thing real
56?
Quick here. There wasn't a World Cup in 56. Let me check.
That's a long time ago.
They won in 66.
Did they win recently?
No.
Well, that's what I'm looking.
Okay.
I'm looking here. The closest that they got was they finished in fourth place in 2018.
Yeah.
Against Belgium, who has since been eliminated. You know, I think they could potentially take it for the first time since 1966, where they beat West Germany. However, though, I mean, I think it's going to be very hard to try and top Messi when Messi is still one of the top players in all of soccer.
Right.
And it doesn't seem from how he's. You know, from how he's performed so far, it doesn't seem like he has any signs of slowing down whatsoever. So, I would be very surprised if we see a team other than Argentina from our side of the bracket in the finals. Also, a little bit of news from soccer in regards to a soccer legend. Unfortunately, it looks like the end of days are coming or are upon us for Brazilian soccer legend Pelé. Earlier today, it was reported that Pelé had been moved to end-of-life care and is only being treated for symptoms such as pain and shortness of breath.
Was that like office care?
Yeah, he's been moved to end-of-life care. So it's technically hospice care, I guess you could say. But
so
over, you know, overseas.
Be dealing with the same week.
Yeah, possibly.
Yes.
The hospital, though, does say that he is in stable condition. However, though, he has been dealing with cancer, I believe. He's been battling colon cancer for a while now. And, it says here that he had stopped responding to chemotherapy treatment for the cancer. So, basically, his body is essentially beginning to shut down from what it sounds like. But Pelé, though, is easily the top Brazilian star in all of Brazilian football, and actually he may be the biggest soccer star, I think, to potentially have played the game.
Exactly. You should have seen him as a player on the Cosmos back in the 70s. I mean, he was bigger than even both baseball teams combined.
Where are the Cosmos? I've heard of Pelé, but where are the Cosmos?
New York.
Okay.
Yeah, they were a team based out of New York. They actually played in three different stadiums. They played in Yankee Stadium, Giants Stadium, and what was the third one that they played? They played in one other stadium.
Nassau,
okay. So it's – yeah, he was there for – 3 years, I think, played in 64 games and recorded 37 goals, and that was basically the end of his playing career. This is just how astounding that his stat line was. In 636 games playing for Santos in Brazil, he scored 618 goals, missing only, like, basically 18 goals away from being a goal per game player, essentially. In career Brazil or in career international games, 92 games, he had 77 goals internationally for Team Brazil. And actually, let me see, was there? I believe he played in the World Cup.
Yes.
Film. Yeah. He won three World Cups. He won three World Cups with Brazil back in 58, 62, and 70. Let's see. Actually, the New York Cosmos, he won the Soccer Bowl for the North American Soccer League in 1977. And also the Atlantic Conference Championship in 77 as well. There's also a couple of other cups that he has won throughout his career. But, you know, arguably he's considered to be one of the most decorated soccer players in soccer history. And unfortunately, it sounds like while he is responding well to treatment for a respiratory infection, his cancer treatment has officially reached the end of its cycle. So he's basically living on borrowed time right now as it stands.
So this could be the second. So this will be the second death in the sports world in the past week we could be dealing with.
News of first?
Yeah, well,
Steve, you might know. Diane, you might or might not know. You've heard of a picture named Gaylord Perry, right?
Yes. That's right.
Yes.
Where are he coming from?
yeah. He passed away Wednesday. He was on Fearless in
Minnesota, right?
No, he was not with Minnesota. Let me look that up again. Or as I call him, Mr. Spitball.
Why are you calling that?
Oh, that's right.
He's the one. He invented the spitball. Well, he was with the American League. So we're gonna look this up. Okay. So he passed away on Wednesday. He first came with the Mariners, and then he went to the Royals. Okay, let's look at this again. He ended with the Mariners.
Actually, no. He started off with the Giants back in 62. He was quite the journeyman. He went from the Giants from 62 to 71, then from 72 to 75. From 72 to 75, he played with Cleveland. Then he stopped at Texas from 75 to 77. The Padres from 78 to 79. Back to Texas for a little bit in 1980. Then he visited the Yankees in 1980 as well.
Yes, he did.
He also had a stop with the Atlanta Braves in 81. He spent 2 years or parts of 2 years with the Seattle Mariners from 82 to 83. And then he finished his career with the Kansas City Royals in 1983.
Before they went to the World Series.
Wow,
yeah.
this guy got around.
That's what I call him, the journeyman.
Yep, and he was also inducted as a member of the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 1991, mm-hmm. his third year on the ballot with a 77.2% of the vote. And as you said, Lou, he was known for throwing spitballs, and perhaps even more for making batters think he was throwing them on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
He was a 5-time All-Star, a 2-time Cy Young Award winner.
Cy Young.
He led the league in wins 3 separate times. He also pitched a no-hitter. On September 17th of 1968, his number 36 is retired by the San Francisco Giants, and he is part of the Wall of Fame of the Giants as well as the Hall of Fame of the Cleveland Guardians / Indians.
The Guardians.
But he
I can never
his career.
Get used to that game.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get used to it.
I say gargoyles.
Since everybody is so used to the Cleveland Indians, Cleveland Guardians just doesn't roll off the tongue that much better at all.
Yeah.
Gaylord Perry, though, did finish his career with a record of 314 wins and 265 losses. With a career mm-hmm. earned run average of 3.11, mm-hmm. and he had 3,534 career mm-hmm. strikeouts as well.
This guy must have been good.
He was good.
Okay.
I think I had him on my Sports Illustrated covers.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he actually contracted COVID-19. Last year, and he never fully recovered from it. He ended up dying 2 days ago at the age of 84. Though I don't think it says from what, so I'd assume it's from natural causes.
Natural causes,
okay. I wonder if they may attribute COVID-19 as part of the reason, though.
It's possible.
Since he never fully recovered from it.
It's possible.
Right.
We will never know.
No, I think we will know at some point. We just won't know right away.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. Well, we'll know. We'll probably know at some point, but it'll probably take a little bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a few championship games going on right now in college football.
Yes, we do.
Currently, the Michigan Wolverines have a slim 4-point lead over the Purdue Boilermakers in the Big Ten Championship, which can be seen on Fox by a score of 14-10 currently, with about 5.5 minutes to go in the second quarter. In the Subway ACC Championship game, which can be seen on ABC, the Clemson Tigers have a 21-7 lead over the North Carolina Tar Heels to determine who will win the ACC title there. Some finals from earlier today, the Georgia Bulldogs reasserted their dominance over the SEC with a 50-30 win over the LSU Tigers in the SEC title game.
I expected closer.
I kind of did too, Lou. I'm not going to lie. I expected a little bit of a closer game, but Stetson Bennett, he put on one hell of a show. 274 yards, 4 touchdowns for the Georgia Bulldogs. I mean, it's, you know, I'm kind of looking at the teams that are in the running potentially for the national title. And at this point, why do we even need to run a playoff? Just give the championship to Georgia. You know, there hasn't really been a team that's really even come close to beating them this year. So, you know, at this point, they're basically playing on a whole entire different level than anybody else in college football right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they
have been challenged all this year.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe their closest matchup was a 26-22 win over Missouri, which is actually kind of surprising considering the fact that Missouri, at the time, they were 2-3, and let's see, where did they finish? They finished off at 6-6, so.
Yeah.
They had so much trouble against a 6-6 team. But, and it looks like in the NHL right now, I need to see who got that goal. I think that might be Frederick's second of the game. By the way, the Boston Bruins are completely dominating the Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche right now, 4-1.
They're dominating the whole league, period.
I know it is a quite a bit of a surprise. You know, we talked earlier today about this, the fact that the Boston Bruins have for some reason bringing Jim Montgomery in as the head coach has all of a sudden revitalized this team to. You know, because there's so much talent, and make it 5-1. Jake DeBrusk joins the party.
Yeah, this team was unbelievable this year. Not that I'm a Bruins fan, I never will be, but I will give credit to the phenomenal job they've been doing this. And we're only like 6-7 weeks in the season, and look at the damage they've already done so far.
Right.
It's almost sick.
Yeah, and It's the 100th career goal for Jake DeBrusk here. I mean, it's flat out astounding the numbers that they're putting up this year. I mean, let me standings here. Hopefully they have it broken down by. Okay, let's see. So. Oh, believe it or not, New Jersey actually has more goals scored than they do. New Jersey entering today.
Good.
Entering today, New Jersey had.
New Jersey needs goal scorers.
New Jersey had 93. They had 93 goals. The Bruins had 88. The Bruins now just made it up to 93. Let me look. Actually, hopefully they have a breakdown of goals for. What the average of goals per game is.
Well, the Devils are doing so well.
Yeah, the Devils, you know, they're continuing to stay on the right path right now, from what it looks like
Good.
Here. So it's definitely a great turnaround year, finally, for the Devils. So
let me bring up here.
Where is...
And
okay,
you don't know Steve, I am a Devils fan.
He
yeah.
knows.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
So here we go. I found the official stats. The Bruins actually lead the league with 3.95 goals for per game. Second place is the Dallas Stars with 3.88 goals per game, followed by the Seattle Kraken. Seattle Kraken are third best in goals for per game at 3.78.
Yeah.
However, their problem is they're also one of the worst teams in goals against per game, giving up 3 goals per game as well.
Could the fact that they're an expansion team have anything to do with that?
I can kind of see that being a possibility as to why they're the fact that they're an expansion team and, you know, they're not really they don't have the same prospect pool and everything that
no.
all these other teams have. I mean, just think about it. When they first came into the league, the teams that they picked players from, the teams that they picked players from, they only gave them a select amount of players to choose from. So,
yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, a team like Boston, they aren't going to make, like, oh, Patrice Bergeron available for the Seattle Kraken to potentially take.
No.
Or a David Pastrnak. So, you know, Seattle isn't going to get those big players, but they are, they kind of remind me of little?
No, what?
They kind of remind me of the Vegas Golden Knights from their first year.
Yes, of course.
That's an expansion team, too.
Yeah. They're an expansion team, and they actually, you know, they did really, really well in their first year. So Seattle this year, at least at the beginning, reminds me a little bit of the first year Golden Knights. And the biggest surprise, though, Lou, probably Martin Jones is the main reason why they're actually as good as they are. He's the third-ranked goaltender in the entire league right now, which is kind of hard to believe.
I don't remember. Who's the first-ranked goaltender?
That would be Linus Ullmark of the Boston Bruins, entering today's game was 13. He was 13-1 with a 2 goals against average. Although following today he'll be 14-1. But right now though, it looks like we're going for Vezina Trophy finalists potentially. You're looking at Linus Ullmark, Logan Thompson of the Vegas Golden Knights, and Martin Jones of the Seattle Kraken. I never thought I would see Martin Jones and Vezina. Well, yeah, I mean, right now, so far, Logan Thompson has played the most games out of the three that have been. Actually, no, Martin Jones has played the most games out of the three that have been mentioned. But Logan Thompson does have. Well, let me see. Where is? He has the second best numbers in terms of save percentage and goals against average. He does have more saves, though, but that may be just because he's played more games than Ullmark. But Ullmark right now, at the very least, as of right now, Ullmark has the top goalie stats in all of the league. So, and I guess, you know, it's kind of odd to think about this, Lou, that he, you know, a lot of people said that he could be this good when he was previously a member of the Buffalo Sabres. Everybody was looking at him as being a great goaltender if only he could stay healthy. And so far from what we've seen in his time in Boston, he had a pretty good year last year, and now he's putting up a tremendous start to start the season this year. So
yes,
definitely helping his cause. And although, you know, I will say, though, I don't know what to think about this matchup tonight, considering the fact that the Bruins are facing Colorado's backup goaltender. But
yeah,
both of their goaltenders, Francouz and Georgiev, who is the starter, both of them the last couple of games haven't really performed that well. So
no, I haven't.
You know, I don't know really what to think actually about them currently winning 5-1, but the one thing I'll say about Colorado, I think maybe there's a little bit of a Stanley Cup hangover, but I don't think it's that bad compared to other teams in previous years. But you know, Colorado, they're still a very tough team. I think they'll inevitably bounce back. You're probably going to be seeing them in the playoffs this year. They are dealing with a couple of injuries. So, you know, once they get back to full health, you know, once they get Gabriel Landeskog back and a couple of others, they should probably get back to the top of the mountain in terms of contenders for the Stanley Cup. But yeah, that's definitely there's definitely a little bit of a Stanley Cup hangover there. But looking at the rankings right now in the standings, the New Jersey Devils, they still lead the Metropolitan Division, and good news, Diane, it is a comfortable 10-point lead over the Carolina Hurricanes. So right now, the Devils are nowhere near any danger of potentially losing their playoff spot, assuming they keep the trajectory going the way that it is right now. They're currently 20.
That's what they do.
They're currently 24-1 for the season. 20 wins, 4 losses, and 1 overtime loss or shootout loss for the New Jersey Devils. Carolina's right behind them with 31 points. New York Islanders and Pittsburgh are tied with 30. And you got the Rangers on the outside looking in there in the Metropolitan Division. Washington, for some reason, they're below 500, so I can't really say anything about Washington. I don't know what the hell is going on with them. This may be one of Ovechkin's last few years, I think, potentially, as his career starts to wind down here.
When do you think 800, though?
Didn't he get 800?
Not yet.
Is he almost there?
He is. He's within single
maybe
digits
this year.
Yeah, I figured that. But, you know, is he, like, going to hit, like, you know, like in, say, January or, like in early February? Or like, you know, like, I'm thinking maybe before the All-Star break, I think he hits it.
When's the All-Star break?
In mid-January. Steve, pretend you didn't hear that question because I'm going to ask you that next week. So pretend you didn't hear that question.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he's currently, wait a minute. So he entered the season at 780. Let's see where he is now. Right now, at least, in terms of goals for the season. let's see, roster. Where's Ovi? Where's Ovi? There he is.
Ovi.
Ovechkin has 13. So he's only 7 away right now, actually.
793.
He could actually, you know, he could realistically get that before the All-Star game. So I don't think he's that far out, Lou. You could see it actually before the All-Star game, because I mean currently he's got 13 goals and 12 assists right now. So
if he goes on the streak he has, yes. But as we all know, we've seen, you know, before where they're in striking distance and then they go into like a slump. Say Aaron Judge. But I know it's baseball and it's surfing. You get the idea. I mean, they're so close to it, but then they seem to go in like a lull, and it takes, you know, like a few more games or like 2 weeks to hit it before, you know, they hit that milestone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really depends. But right now, he just seems to be their primary option on offense, to the point of where, you know, their whole team for some reason is having a hard time trying to produce. So I have a feeling if, you know, he's probably going to be that first option when it comes to goal scoring. So
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he gets it before the All-Star break.
Next thing you got to say, it's going to be before Christmas. Yeah, probably. It could happen. But I'll ask you again
on
the show.
It won't happen before Christmas.
Aha. Okay, I guess I'm just getting a little bit ahead of myself.
I doubt it unless he scores like literally every single game before Christmas, maybe.
Mm.
But
he's only 7 away, and it doesn't take only 7 goals. Well,
no,
by his standards,
it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, if he does, maybe if he has a couple of 2-goal games, he could get it fairly quickly.
I wouldn't put out the question.
Neither would I.
The Boston Bruins, they just beat the Colorado Avalanche, so they have improved to 20-3 on the season for 40 points. That puts them 5 points ahead of the Toronto Maple Leafs in the Atlantic Division and about 11 points ahead of the Tampa Bay Lightning. In the Atlantic as well. Tampa Bay has 29 points. Detroit has 27 points. Detroit right now would be in a playoff spot.
They haven't made the playoffs now in 7 years. So this has been quite an improvement from what the Detroit we have seen in more recent years.
Right, yeah. They haven't made it since, what, the Zetterberg years, I think?
Yes.
Probably a very long time ago.
Like I said, it's been 7 years.
Yeah, like the mid 2010s, I think. I forget when Zetterberg retired, but they made it in, if I recall correctly, I think they made it in Pavel Datsyuk's last year as well. I could be wrong. Let me double check, actually. Datsyuk, when did you retire? You retired in... never mind. You retired this past year. But your final year in Detroit was in 2016. So, let's see. 2016, where are you? Right here. Their last year was in 2016 when they were eliminated in 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
So because Pavel Datsyuk was basically part of every single Detroit Red Wing playoff
game.
That basically snapped their straight playoff streak, I believe, as well, too. So. By the way, what number was I looking at here? Speaking of the Toronto Maple Leafs, with a point tonight, Mitch Marner has now recorded a point in his 19th consecutive game This now sets a new Maple Leafs franchise record, breaking a tie with Eddie Olczyk and Daryl Sittler, which they previously had 18 consecutive games with a point recorded. Mitch Marner now has the record with 19 consecutive games. So that's definitely that's obviously Austin Matthews isn't really cooking up anything yet, but Mitch Marner definitely has so far this year. All right, a little bit of boxing news. Tyson Fury officially retained his WBC title today over Derek Chisora with a win by technical knockout at 2 minutes and 51 seconds of the 10th round via a right uppercut. Chisora was able to get back up and put his hands up, but as he did so, he then stumbled back he stumbled forward into the referee, and the referee then waved off the fight immediately following that. Tyson Fury then called out Oleksandr Usyk at the end of the fight, which drew no reaction from Usyk, and it's expected that the next fight for Tyson Fury, if he does if he does want to fight again, will be against Oleksandr Usyk, presumably for Usyk's championships.
Yeah.
But that's left to be seen, obviously.
Yes.
Also, going over to the UFC, you know, I wish I had said this on your show, Lou, because I completely forgot about this. There is some controversy in the UFC or in MMA in general.
What else is
In regards to mixed martial arts coach and former UFC fighter James Krause. Fighters who remain involved with James Krause will be temporarily banned from participating in UFC events pending several investigations into suspicious betting activity, according to the UFC's announcement yesterday. The Nevada State Athletic Commission informed Krause on November 18th that his corner license was suspended and would remain so as the commission investigates the happenings of a November 5th fight between Derek Minner and Shailin Nordanbieke that triggered multiple gambling investigations, per the UFC. Krause was in Minner's corner in the fight, as Minner has since been released by the UFC, according to the promotion in a statement made yesterday. The UFC has since advised Krause and the respective managers working with impacted fighters that, effective immediately, fighters who choose to continue to be coached by Krause or who continue to train in his gym will not be permitted to participate in UFC events pending the outcome of the aforementioned government investigations. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, the UFC has released Derek Minner from the organization. And here's the thing. Multiple sports books reported receiving unusual betting interest on Nordanbieke to win by knockout in the first round and for the fight to last fewer than 2.5 rounds. The odds on the fight moved dramatically in the hours leading up to the featherweight bout in Las Vegas, with Nordanbieke moving from a 220 favorite to a 420 favorite. And just 30 seconds into the fight, Minner threw a left kick to Nordanbieke's body and immediately grimaced and reached for his left leg. Nordanbieke closed in and Minner then went for another left body kick before Nordanbieke dropped Minner with a knee to the head and finished on the ground with elbows. The TKO stoppage came at 107 of the first round, and the unusual betting action prompted an investigation by U.S. Integrity, which is a Las Vegas firm that works with sports books and gambling regulators to monitor the betting market. The UFC also said it was investigating the fight with its partner, Don Best Sports. The investigations, as I said, are still ongoing. In addition, the Nevada State Athletic Association is planning to take disciplinary action against Minner for non-disclosure on his pre-fight medical form during a December 14th meeting, according to Executive Director of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, Jeff Mullen. So, obviously you can't really tell whether or not somebody's going to take a dive or something, because you would think if anybody was going to take a dive, it would be the fighter that was favored.
Right.
The fighter that was the underdog. And
of course.
Or, who would, if you wanted to manipulate, because from what it sounds like here, Lou, it kind of sounds like they're accusing fighters of manipulating betting lines.
Mm.
And if this was the case, then Minner would have picked up an easy victory. But from what it looks like, it kind of just looks like to me that the guy just got dropped. Now, obviously, I would have to see a replay of this. It's hard to really react to this, because I don't know exactly what to take of it. Because we've seen flash knockouts happen before. We've seen quick knockouts happen before in the UFC. Winning a minute and 7 seconds into the first round wouldn't really be much of a shock. So what's your take on this, Lou? The fact that a UFC coach or an MMA coach has been suspended due to potential illegal betting activity. I mean, doesn't it kind of, and here's the thing, they're not the ones that are placing the bets. It would be different if they were betting on their own fights, but they're not betting. They're not the one placing the bets. So doesn't this seem sort of suspicious, the fact that the UFC is taking this sort of stance, considering the fact that they have a betting agreement to begin with?
Yeah, it does. But in the same thing, I'm not surprised by this. I mean, under suspicion of that, I mean, UFC and MMA, they don't always play with the book anyway. So this doesn't really shock me at all that there's some controversy about what's going on here. I'd be surprised if it wasn't controversy.
Huh. Well, it's just kind of weird, I feel, because of the fact that they have a betting sponsorship and everything, and you would think that if there was going to be anybody taking a fall, it would be the person that was favored to win the fight. You would think that the person that was favored to win the fight would be taking a fall, so that a lot of money could be won by people betting for the underdog. So,
I don't know. Maybe.
I guess I don't get why this is such a big deal. I guess maybe because of the fact that there was an increase. They went from like minus two something to minus four something. So maybe that's why there's investigations, because usually, when there's betting on fights, normally the line doesn't move that quickly.
No, that's a very slow needle that's moving around.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But obviously, though, there's probably going to be more to this moving forward. And, I mean, for all we know, maybe James Krause, once everything gets cleared, maybe James Krause will be allowed to coach in the UFC again. But it just seems very odd, the fact that, that this has come up here. We do have another stat here in the NHL. Patrick Kane has become the third active player to reach the 1,200 point club, joining both Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin.
And Crosby.
And actually, he becomes the fourth U.S.-born player in NHL history to record 1,200 points, joining Mike Modano, Phil Housley, and Jeremy Roenick as the four U.S.-born players in NHL history to record 1,200 points. And among that group, he required the fewest games to reach that milestone. Kane did it in 1,130 games played. Mike Modano had done it in 1,201 games played. Roenick, 1,318, and Housley, 1,428. So I think it's actually pretty impressive, the fact that Patrick Kane was able to do it in only 1,130 games played.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to some college coaching activity here. Hugh Freeze has agreed to a deal to become Auburn's next head football coach, according to the school on Monday. Auburn administrators, including athletic director John Cohen, met with football staff members earlier in the day to tell them about Freeze's hiring. They were planning to meet with the players at 6 p.m. Eastern that day, and Freeze was scheduled to arrive on campus later Monday evening. According to a statement that was made after a thoughtful, thorough, and well-vetted search, we ended where we started, with Hugh Freeze. Of all the candidates, we considered Hugh was the best fit. Fit has several meanings, but the most important factors were student-athlete development, football strategy, recruiting, and SEC experience. His contract with Auburn is set for 6 years at an average annual value of $6.5 million per year. Freeze had spent the last four seasons, the last four seasons at Liberty, where he took the Liberty Flames to unprecedented heights. He's widely regarded as one of the top offensive minds in the game, and this will be his second head coaching stint in the SEC, as he led Ole Miss's program from 2012 to 2016. He also beat Alabama and Nick Saban in back-to-back seasons in 2014 and 2015, and capped the 2015 season with the Rebels' first Sugar Bowl victory since 1970. However, though, Hugh Freeze has a little bit of a past. You can kind of put it that way. In particular, there was evidence that Ole Miss employees and boosters had arranged numerous impermissible benefits for players such as car loans and cash back in 2016. Let me bring this up here. So I guess Freeze apparently was accused of not monitoring his assistants, and also accused Ole Miss of not properly controlling the program that was going around. Freeze had continued to recruit players during the investigation. Six Ole Miss players later said that Freeze and other Ole Miss officials repeatedly lied to them during their recruitment about the severity of the pending charges against the school. After the charges became public, those players had asked the NCAA to issue a waiver to rules that would have prevented them from transferring to other schools, which those waivers were then later granted. Houston Nutt, who was Freeze's predecessor, had sued Ole Miss for defamation, contending that Freeze and school officials had conspired to smear him with false claims about these charges. And that was then later settled by Ole Miss, and a public apology to Nutt was then issued. Also, as part of discovery for the lawsuit, Nutt's attorneys had filed a Freedom of Information request for calls that Freeze had made on his university-issued cell phone during January of 2016. Upon reviewing those records, Nutt's attorneys discovered a call to a number associated with a female escort service and alerted Ole Miss officials about it. Freeze claimed it was a misdialed number. However, school officials investigated and discovered what they later described as a concerning pattern of similar calls dating back to shortly after he arrived in Oxford, at least a dozen calls over 33 months, often made while Freeze was traveling on business trips using Ole Miss's private plane. Then he was given an ultimatum in 2017, either resign or be fired for violating the morals clause of his contract, which he then opted to resign. In that situation, offensive coordinator Matt Luke was then named the interim coach. And thus, after he left, Ole Miss was then punished by the NCAA for the recruiting and academic violations committed under both Houston Nutt and Hugh Freeze for the specific things that I had said earlier. The punishments had included a two-year postseason ban, 3 years of probation, and a four-year ban on some scholarships. As well, the NCAA had forced Ole Miss to vacate 33 wins from 2010 to 2016. So as a result, 27 of Freeze's wins were stripped from the books. And his record at Ole Miss is now officially 12-25, while it was 39-25 on the football field before the sanctions had been put into place. So needless to say, there's no thing when it comes to, he's no stranger to scandals, essentially.
No.
I'm kind of surprised, I guess, that Auburn would be willing to take on that sort of baggage.
Right.
But I guess apparently their first, primary coach was going to be, I forget who was it that it was going to be. Let's see here real quick. It looks like Lane Kiffin. That's who it was. Lane Kiffin was going to be the front runner for Auburn, but then a whole bunch of stuff happened, and Lane Kiffin basically confirmed that he would be staying at Ole Miss instead. So, also, Colorado, the Colorado Buffaloes have offered their head coaching job to NFL legend Deion Sanders, who is expected to arrive in Boulder tonight to accept the head coaching job, according to Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. Colorado's Board of Regents has called for a special meeting, and a grand celebration is planned for tomorrow. Deion Sanders, of course, is the head coach of Jackson State, who were just in a football game of their own today, defeating the Southern University Jaguars 43-24 for the SWAC East title, I believe it says here. So he finishes with an 11-0 record as Jackson State's head coach, and now he will be moving to Colorado to try and turn around that Colorado Buffaloes football team. So that should be definitely a bit of an interesting task for him to undertake here. Also, a little bit of news, too. Former Nebraska Cornhuskers interim head coach Mickey Joseph was arrested for strangulation and domestic assault after an alleged altercation on Wednesday. Lincoln Police had announced. The LPD said officers responded to a domestic service call from Joseph's home in Lincoln at around 2 p.m. And after an investigation, he was arrested at a separate location and taken to jail. Nebraska Athletic Director Trev Alberts released a statement on Joseph's arrest, announcing he has been placed on administrative leave. They have no additional comment at this time. Joseph had taken the reins for the Cornhuskers after Scott Frost's firing back in September, going 3-6 as their interim head coach. Matt Rhule, of course, was announced as Frost's replacement last Saturday, and he had high praise for Joseph, who was slated to be Nebraska's wide receivers coach and associate head coach under the new regime. So after this, who knows if that's gonna remain.
Yeah.
And then we go from the bad to the ugly. Florida Gators backup quarterback Jalen Kitna, who is the son of ex-NFL star John Kitna, was arrested in Florida on Wednesday at around 3:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on five separate charges, which included two counts of distribution of child exploitation material and three counts of possession of child pornography. Jalen, who was a touted recruit out of Burleson High School in Texas, committed to the Gators in 2020. He joined the team in 2021 and was a redshirt for his first year. He saw his first on-the-field action this season, making his debut against Eastern Washington in October. In total, he's appeared in four games for Florida, with his best performance coming against Eastern Washington, where he threw for 152 yards and a touchdown. There had been speculation that he could start the team's bowl game later this year if Anthony Richardson, a coveted NFL draft prospect, would opt out of the contest. He has since been suspended indefinitely from the Gators football program as a result. The Gainesville Police Department says it executed a search warrant on Wednesday at Jalen Kitna's Florida residence after it received a tip that a Discord user had distributed an image of child sexual abuse material through the social media messaging platform. According to cops, an investigation revealed that the account belonged to Kitna, and an additional image, making two total, had actually been distributed from it. Cops say that when they made the contact with Kitna at the residence, he told them he remembered sharing the two images, but he believed them to be legal since he had found them online. Police say Kitna admitted he should not have shared the photos. Cops claim as part of the search warrant that his electronic devices were seized, and they say that an ensuing search revealed the Florida Gators football player was in possession of three additional images of child sexual abuse material. They arrested him and then booked him on those five charges a short time later. So, I guess all that can really be said, Lou, is his football career and, quite frankly, a big chunk of his life probably over with at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, what a way for somebody to completely throw away their career, or just to do it in general, is sickening.
Yes. Foolish. You know,
have that sort of stuff.
It's really not a way that's really not the way that anybody wants to go out, but that's how, you know, it is, you know, very upsetting to hear that.
Yeah. Okay, after starting the season off 4-1 and now losing their last six games in a row to fall out of bowl contention, And even a victory over their biggest rival last week wasn't enough to save the job of now former UNLV Rebel head coach Marcus Arroyo, after athletic director Eric Harper has announced on Monday that they are planning to move on from Arroyo, who went 7-23 over three seasons as UNLV head coach. He had 2 years left remaining on his $7.7 million deal, so he will be paid a $2.3 million buyout over the remainder of that term. As such, if the team is invited to a bowl, then associate head coach and linebackers coach Kenwick Thompson will serve as the interim coach for that specific game. It says here that they could play in the postseason because there might not be enough six-win teams to fill all of the bowl slots. Another team that is looking for a new head, the Western Michigan Broncos, have fired their head coach, Tim Lester. The decision comes after Lester went 5-7 this season, his first losing season in 6 years as head coach. Lester went a respectable 37-32 over six seasons and 26-20 in MAC play. During those 6 years, Western Michigan did not appear in the conference title game or win the MAC West. He had 3 years remaining on his deal, and the school is expected to pay him a $500,000 buyout. Looks like, let's see, it does not say who would replace him if they end up going to a bowl game. So, and speaking of which,
well, remember that's not until tomorrow that they'll all be announced.
Yeah, they'll all be announced tomorrow. So, what we're probably going to do, just for a little bit of a teaser for next week, we will probably give our bowl picks for next week.
All right.
So,
I'll do half of mine.
We will. Yeah. Okay. Okay, you know what? That's what I'll do. Because you said you were going to do it for your show. I will get your official picks on your show for the half of your picks on your show, and then we'll do the other packs, the other picks on here. And I'll, of course, get those submitted to for Games Gridiron.
Yeah.
I'm doing
mine in two parts.
But sticking with football, let's talk about Matt Patricia.
Oh, yeah.
And,
here we go.
And the Patriots' lack of an offense, I'll call it.
What?
The Patriots, obviously, this was a big rivalry game, Patriots and the Bills, on Thursday Night Football. I've said it since the beginning, ever since they decided to go with – when they decided to not name an official offensive coordinator, Lou, I remember telling you this was going to be a complete clusterfuck of a season.
Ooh,
and here we are. I don't think there's a lower low, and let's remember something here. The Patriots, they struggled against the Jets when they won 10-3 against the Jets. That's one thing. But now, literally, the same guy who scored a touchdown in that game by doing a by returning a kickoff for all of those yards for a touchdown, the same guy who is responsible for the Patriots' only offensive touchdown this entire game on Thursday night. With Marcus Jones, I guess Patricia thought that he's such a genius that, oh, I'm going to take a defensive player, put him in as a running back, and have him basically, you know, run as part of the, you know, part of our offensive, matchups. And they decided to do that. He ends up catching, Marcus Jones ends up being the lead Patriot receiver with two catches for 51 yards and a touchdown. The next lead receiver after him was rookie Tyquan Thornton, who had two catches for 31 yards. Then you had running back Ramondre Stevenson with six catches for 24 yards. You have Jacoby Myers, yeah, three catches, 22 yards. And then just to put down, just for the sake of argument here, Nelson Agholor, two catches, 17 yards. Devontae Parker, two catches, 16 yards. Kendrick Bourne, one catch, 15 yards. Hunter Henry, two catches, 10 yards. Jonnu Smith, two catches, 6 yards. Now, I know what everybody's saying. Mac Jones is not, you know, Mac Jones isn't the answer at quarterback, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
This isn't on Mac Jones. This isn't on Mac Jones whatsoever. And James White, you know, Patriot legend James White even said that he believes that Tom Brady would have acted similarly to Jones after Jones lashed out. It said they showed it on TV. They didn't show who he was lashing out at, but it's assumed that he was lashing out at Matt Patricia. In particular, he said, and I quote, "Throw the fucking ball. The quick game sucks."
So why don't you throw the ball, stupid?
The quick game sucks. Well, because he's following what Patricia wants him to do, who he wants him to target. Basically, Mac Jones was yelling at Patricia, telling him to you know, call more deep ball plays. Stop it with the dink and dunk pass bullshit, essentially.
Right.
Jones had told reporters after the game that he wanted the Patriots to throw the ball deeper down the field and regretted letting his frustration get the better of him. Basically, he said that he kind of let his emotions get to him. And he said, what I said was about throwing it deeper within the short game. I got to execute that part better. But it's the short game that we kept going to, which is working. But I felt like we needed chunk plays. I shouted that out to kind of get everyone going. That's emotional. That's football. I'm passionate about this game. Obviously, you don't want to let your emotions get the best of you. I think that's pretty much it. It wasn't directed at anybody, just emotion coming out. We kind of needed a spark.
Right.
Jones claims, though, that he's still on the same page with Matt Patricia. He says, it was just saying, let's go for it. Let's be aggressive. Let's take those shots. Just go down fighting. And he claims that Matt Patricia was on the same page. Bullshit. Patricia,
exactly.
Patricia only cares about one person, and that's himself.
Himself.
He only cares about trying to make himself look like a genius by putting in a defensive player at running back and then having Mac pass to him for a touchdown. Even as well, Kendrick Bourne even called out Matt Patricia about how there needs to be accountability. And in particular, also third down execution, he even said we need to scheme up better. And basically, it's a whole thing about the inability to generate offense. He said, in particular, we need to get the ball downfield. I think Mac needs more time. He's obviously running around, so it's hard to get the ball downfield when you can't really have time for him to throw. No knock to the line. It's just what we need to work on. The receivers can't do nothing if the ball can't get downfield. If we can't throw it past 5 yards, it's going to be a long game. Bourne said that the Patriots have the plays in the playbook and the players on the field to get it done. This is just how bad it is. The New England offense, 242 yards against the Buffalo Bills. They were down for 10. They were down by 10 the entire game until late in the fourth quarter when Buffalo extended it to 24-7. And then New England instead decided, let's just kick a field goal at the end to try and come away with something, I guess. And also, you know, there's been multiple teams that have said that multiple players have said that they have called out the plays that the Patriots are running on offense. So it's, you know, there's no secret as to if Patricia thinks he's, you know, trying to trick teams. Teams are not fooled by what he's running.
No.
It's very clear and simple. What type of passes and plays that he's running out there on that field. So, you know, I think, and this is what sucks too, Lou, about this, is the fact that Mac is now going through, during a year that he's supposed to be taking a step forward, he's taking basically two steps backward, essentially.
Exactly.
Which, you know, if anything, Dan Orlovsky of ESPN has said that Mac Jones should ask for a trade from the Patriots. And so he said, if I was Mac Jones and his reps/team and this offseason, there are no plans for a true proven offensive coordinator to come into New England, I would ask to be traded. It's true. This literally screams that Belichick is trying to do Matt Patricia, who is a defensive-minded coach, a favor by giving him a spot on the coaching staff. And they're instead giving him this is who you have running your offense this year. You have Joe Judge, who is a special teams, a special teams guy mainly, a special teams coach that's partially running the offense. And now you have Matt Patricia, who's a defensive coordinator, pretending to be an offensive coordinator. This New England team, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, Lou, what would have happened if Josh McDaniels hadn't left for Vegas and had stayed in New England?
No, I can't remember. Well, I don't think that Vegas would be where they're. I mean, I don't think the Patriots would be in the dumpster where they are now. I mean, they're just barely holding on. So it has been,
You know, it's just that simple of a question. Is it the fact that the Patriots don't have an offensive coordinator? Is that literally all the problem is here?
I think so.
I mean, Lou, look at these numbers. I'm going to read off these numbers here.
Go ahead.
Last year, he threw for 3,801 yards. With 22 touchdowns and 13 picks under Josh McDaniels. This year, and he got sacked 28 times. This year, he's thrown for only 1,963 yards. Granted, he was injured a couple of games, too. Seven touchdowns, seven picks, and he's been sacked 25 times. I mean, is this just a, you know, is this just a case that they need an actual offensive coordinator?
Yeah.
And that's it?
Well, you know, they do need one, and since they don't seem to have one right now, they have to get somebody to fill the spot.
And I gotta tell you, there's been rumors going around that Tom Brady might return next year.
Of course.
I guarantee you he's not returning if Matt Patricia is your offensive coordinator. I definitely wouldn't.
No.
I mean, Jesus, you know, but honestly, this team has almost become unwatchable. And, you know, I can't believe I would say that, you know, being a Patriots fan.
Yeah.
But there's only so much that a defense can do. If Belichick thinks that absolutely sucks at calling the offense as his offensive coordinator and still be able to field a successful team, I mean, then that's Bill basically just – that's Bill's ego essentially saying, I can put whoever I want at coach and I can prove that, you know, I can prove that it's me, that I'm responsible for the success, not the players.
Yeah.
Another thing, too, that you kind of have to wonder is maybe this is Bill's final year. He originally did say he didn't want to coach into his 70s. He is 70 officially this year. So, you know, I'm almost wondering, is this
his
way
words, huh?
of, well, that's specifically what he had said in an interview, that he wasn't going to make the same mistake as some other coaches who have coached well into their 70s.
Yeah.
So, you know, this brings up another question, Lou. Is Belichick on the hot seat?
I would think he is. You know, it's that Patriots team has not been the same since Brady. I mean, when you have Brady, I think Belichick's job was more secure. Now, I'm not so sure. So, there's going to be some changes made, and it's going to start with him.
Yeah, it's just really, you know, either Belichick's on the hot seat or Belichick's retiring is kind of what makes me think here. And
yeah.
it's going to be really horrific if Matt Patricia is named as the new head coach if Belichick retires.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just looking at this team and thinking, you know, Robert Kraft, the owner, to be looking at his team and saying, what the fuck are you doing? You know, why?
Yeah.
What I'm wondering is why hasn't more pressure been put on Belichick to actually do something here? And first off, they had Bill O'Brien available, ready to go from Alabama. To be named, everybody thought that Bill O'Brien was going to be named the offensive coordinator this past off season. But no, Bill didn't want to upset his little buddy Nick Saban.
No.
And take away Bill O'Brien, even though Bill O'Brien would have been the perfect coordinator for Mac Jones. Dog shit Patricia, which. Let me take a real quick look here, actually, at the standings here. The Patriots, they currently field, well, they're not the worst offense in the AFC East. That belongs to the Jets, actually.
Talk about franchise.
The Jets have the worst offense by about 19 points. But let me look. The Steelers' offense is worse, the Colts' offense, the Houston Texans' offense.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, even the Titans' offense is actually worse. Well, actually, no, they have a better offense than all of the AFC South. All of the AFC South have less than 249 points.
Mm.
They have a better offense than the Broncos. That's not really saying much.
Yeah.
They do have a better offense than the Giants, I guess. The Giants have 225. The Commanders have 233. The Buccaneers only have 200. I don't know. You know, I don't really know what to say about this when it comes to Patricia, but there's been games that we could have won this season if Patricia was not our offensive coordinator and it was somebody else. If it was somebody else, I guarantee, you know, somebody who actually knew how to call offensive plays, I guarantee you the Patriots would probably be in a much better spot than where they are right now.
Absolutely,
at 6-6. And as it stands right now, if the season were to end today, they would not be in the playoffs.
Right.
So, you know, as far as Patricia goes, I gotta say this: either move him to defensive coordinator or an assistant or whatever at the end of the season, or just fire him. Because you're not going to go anywhere with him as. You're not going to go anywhere with him as offensive coordinator, and you damn sure ain't going anywhere with him as head coach.
No.
Because he was awful in Detroit. So, that being said, you know, I did promise where I was going to give a rant, but I've kind of cooled off on that a little bit.
Okay.
Let's go over from one head case to another head case, as we have Antonio Brown currently holed up in his Tampa mansion. And a arrest warrant has officially been issued for Antonio Brown on domestic violence charges. And it's over him throwing a shoe that struck his fiance in the ponytail.
Yeah.
A shoe.
Yeah.
And the warrant is based on a misdemeanor battery charge of alleged domestic violence that occurred on November 28th. Brown's fiance is also the mother of multiple children with him as well. They unsuccessfully tried to serve him the warrant on Thursday when he would not come out of his house whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So not only did he throw a shoe at her head, striking her in the ponytail, but he also locked her out of a Tampa residence with some of her belongings as well, according to TV station WTVT out in Tampa, which is a local Fox affiliate, actually.
Which area again?
Brown, WTVT.
In
Tampa, I think.
Okay. Well, yes, for that.
Yeah, Fox. It's a Fox affiliate, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I think it is.
Tampa attempted to serve Brown the warrant at the same residence, but he declined to answer the door. WFTS, an ABC affiliate, reported that officers tried for over an hour to get him to emerge by knocking on the door and using a megaphone. So it's, you know, it just really seems like at this point it's basically going to be a stalemate for quite a while. Sam Brock, who was a Miami correspondent for NBC News, tweeted that police said they were not sure if Brown was even inside the home, and they did not want to risk officer safety over a misdemeanor charge. WTVT also reported that the Tampa Police Department had filed a temporary risk protection order against Brown that would have prevented him from possessing a gun or ammunition, but a judge denied the request. It's been, you know, there is a legitimate fear that he may have one or multiple guns inside the house, apparently. So, And, you know, I said this earlier today, and I'll say it again. This literally I can point to one incident that has started this whole entire down spiral for him. And that's when he got hit by Avante's Burfict all the way back when Burfict when Burfict was a Bengal and Antonio Brown was a Steeler.
I remember.
After Brown got hit in the head like he did, I just got three letters to tell you. CTE.
Yes.
He definitely has brain damage. He has to.
Yes.
There's nothing more that I can really think of that would explain why we've seen so many incidents involving Antonio Brown over the last couple of years. So, what are your thoughts, Lou, on all of the stuff that's gone down with Antonio Brown, including the most recent issue here?
He never learns. I mean, he gets arrested for has an incident with a truck driver, and he had to pay him over $1 million, and he gets probation for 2 years. They let him go after a year. Okay, and, you know, that was that. Then he gets in trouble again, some domestic incident. I mean, Brown gets to a murder. He does it again and again. I mean, when is this guy going to get the message? I mean, he is, you know, without doubt, a complete moron. As I said on my show, I mean, this guy doesn't know, you know, when to stop committing all these ridiculous acts. And something's got to be done, I think.
Yeah, it just reeks. It reeks of CTE, basically. There's no other explanation. He has to have some sort of brain damage.
Well, I do kind of feel sorry for him on that case, but, you know, you still have to think before you do anything. You know, obviously he's not thinking with a clear head. Well, of course,
obviously,
you don't have a clear when you've had CTE. But, you know, I mean, this guy needs a lot of help.
Yeah.
Before there's anything else that's stupid.
Right, yeah. It's just unfortunate. And, you know, since then, he's gone on to also kind of troll Tom Brady on social media by posting multiple images multiple clearly photoshopped images of him and Giselle, and even posting a photoshopped image of presumably a nude Giselle Bundchen when it's clear that it's photoshopped anyways. But still, you know, it's just this guy has just completely lost it, period.
Yeah.
Like, he's basically past the point of no return at this point.
That is sad, though. I mean, it had to come to that. You know, I mean, CTE is nothing to be... is not to be, you know, messed with. And, you know, once somebody has contracted that, they're not the same person. You know, I'm sorry to say. I mean, I really do feel sorry for him. But, of course, there's no excuse for him to, you know, break the law again and again. You know, because he's not only becoming a danger to other people, he's also becoming a danger to himself.
Yeah. You know, let's bring in Alex to get his thoughts on this. Alex, welcome to the show. We've been talking about Antonio Brown and his standoff that he had with police earlier this week. What are your thoughts on when it comes to Antonio Brown? Basically, he's facing an arrest warrant for domestic violence.
Yeah. I was on the road earlier, guys. Thanks for letting me join in real quick. I know it's a little late, but I just was listening to what Lewis said. I couldn't agree more. Really becoming a danger to everyone, including himself.
That's even worse.
He definitely CTE, I think, without a doubt. There's something going on internally upstairs. I think he's acting out because of what his brain's been through. Did they even catch up to him? I heard varying accounts of whether or not he was even in the house. Is he still on the run, quote unquote?
They have not gotten him into custody yet. It's unknown. Wow. It's still unknown whether or not he was even in the house. But there's a fear that if he was in the house, he may have had two guns with him. So
yeah, that's awful. He's been acting so erratically. Unfortunately, really anything could happen. It went from him being kind of a clown show where people were just laughing or making memes out of him.
Now he's
got guns and he could have a showdown with cops. Now it's getting really, really bad. It's not a joke anymore.
Right. Yeah, and that's why you know, like I said earlier, the cops have been hesitant to charge into the place because of the fact that there's they tried to get a restricted waiver through a judge when it comes to possessing firearms, and the judge turned it down in regards to Antonio Brown. It's just, and since then, you know, Antonio Brown has been going on social media, talking about the World Cup, promoting his music and shit, while police are basically in a standoff outside his house.
He doesn't take anything seriously. He's above the law.
And they're still actively trying to arrest him.
Well, I hope to teach him a lesson and other people a lesson. You shouldn't be posting about the World Cup when you're wanted by the law. I hope he doesn't get picked up and then bailed out right away. He probably will, but he should be facing a lot more than what his original charge was. If he's basically laughing in the faces of the justice system, and he's posting on social media like there's nothing wrong.
Now, I do think that he was at the home, though, because the cops were initially hesitant to allow the kids to enter the house, which the kids did end up entering the house. So, apparently, he was at the house.
Right.
I suppose, because otherwise, I don't know how else they would have gotten in there.
So, wait a second. So, they got in, and then now he's gone again, though? He took off again?
No, they don't know, because the cops themselves never entered the house.
Wow. It's a crazy story.
Yeah.
We have JB joining us now. I want to get his thoughts on this as well. JB, what are your thoughts on Antonio Brown basically in even more trouble now with the law, and now he's involved in a standoff against police?
Well, geez, I can remember you posting maybe a few days ago, maybe a week ago, about Antonio Brown. I thought, man, this guy needs psychiatric help. He really does.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about this new thing going on with him.
Yeah. By the way, actually, I think it's kind of late for psychiatric help at this point, because
yes.
Yeah, I know.
Too.
Still,
I mean, the damage has essentially been done from his football career. The damage to his head has already been done, essentially. So I don't know if any amount of psychiatric help could even really help him to begin with.
Yeah, to say he's screwed up in the head, that's an understatement.
Yeah, no
and that's... That's just, how can I say it? That's just me talking, and I'm not a professional or anything like that. I mean, that's just me judging Antonio Brown, and I'm sure there's maybe, you know, 80-90% of everybody else that judges him too by just reading what's going on.
All right. Well, we do have some injuries to report here. First off, the Los Angeles Rams. Anybody who's betting on any Los Angeles games, you can basically take whoever Los Angeles is facing for that week. Because, wow, the number of injuries they have this week. Allen Robinson, their big pickup from this offseason, he will be out for the remainder of the season with foot surgery. Basically an utter disaster, catching just 3 touchdowns and never going above 63 yards in a single game this year. 33 catches, 339 yards, and 3 touchdown catches. He has a stress fracture and will need to have a screw inserted into his foot. He's due for an $18 million cap hit next year. Also, Aaron Donald is dealing with a high ankle sprain. He will not play tomorrow, and chances are he may be sat out for the entire rest of the season.
Mm.
Then, to add on top of it, Matthew Stafford has now been placed on injured reserve with multiple concussions, which will effectively end his season. He ends his season with just 2,087 passing yards, 10 touchdowns, and 8 picks. When we talk about hangovers, championship hangovers, I think it's safe to say that the Rams had one hell of a championship hangover this season.
Yeah.
I was never really
–
They were one of the least impressive Super Bowl winning teams in my recent memory, and I've like a lot of people, I thought the Bengals were like a call away from winning that. So the injuries are obviously a shock, but I definitely didn't think they were going to build a dynasty or anything. I thought they kind of got lucky, and they're back to – now they're kind of falling apart.
Lucky.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, Alex, because, you know, everybody thought heading into that Super Bowl that with the role that the Bengals were on, that there was no way in hell that they would lose to, especially after defeating Kansas City. There was no way in hell that they would lose to L.A.
And the Rams got a couple of huge calls inside of like 3 minutes left. I think there was like 2 pass interference calls, and then they were like a couple inches short of our first guy. It was just like 2 or 3 devastating plays went against the Bengals at the end. I'm sorry. I think the Rams got pretty lucky there. They got lucky.
Yeah. And effectively, I mean, now we're seeing basically what, and I believe they don't even have a first round pick this year. I believe.
No, they've mortgaged from the Von Miller deal, other deals. They've sold the farm on, I think, this year. The next couple drafts, the cupboards are pretty empty. They went all in.
Yeah, and also, not to mention, if they were anticipating trying to re-sign Odell Beckham Jr., it sounds like there is considerable doubt that free agent Odell Beckham Jr. can even return to play this year.
Wow,
so,
I didn't realize that. Bro, I didn't know about that.
Right. I mean, he's been visiting with different teams. He was expected to visit with Buffalo this weekend. The Cowboys do remain the favorites for Beckham. It looks like that he's seeking a multi-year deal that ends up being worth $20 million per year, which if that's the case, that would eliminate the Giants out of any potential contract with him. So, you know, if the Rams were looking to bring back Odell Beckham, he's not going to return for a team that's not going to the Super Bowl, or that's not going to the playoffs. So effectively, you could basically say that the you know, that the LA Rams season is officially over. And
absolutely.
Actually, let me take a look real quick here. Let me see. Yeah, Detroit has their first round pick this year. So right now, I believe, let me see where the Rams are. They're 3-8. So let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. So at best, they have the third pick. At worst, they have the fourth pick right now because they're in a tie with the Broncos. So I would assume that maybe strength of schedule would determine that who gets the third overall pick and who gets the fourth overall pick. But so that pick would then go to Detroit. And by the way, Detroit did just activate Jameson Williams today. So Jameson Williams will be making his NFL debut for the Detroit Lions this week against the Jaguars.
Nice.
And from what it sounds like they are ecstatic because they believe that he'll make an immediate impact with what he was showing them during practice.
Absolutely. He was a star at Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Alabama,
I'm
so happy you brought that up.
Yeah.
With the losses by TCU earlier today to Kansas State in overtime, 31-28, and USC's loss to Utah, 47-24, and from what it sounded like during the Clemson game, during the Clemson game or the Georgia game? I forget. They were interviewing Nick Saban. They were interviewing Nick Saban, and he sounds fairly confident that Alabama will be one of the four teams in the college football playoff.
I don't think so.
I hope not. And I don't want to sound anti-Alabama, but I believe their team about two seasons ago would be able to beat the team this season. No problem.
Yeah.
Well,
they're not as strong as normally.
Well, honestly, I think all of the Alabama teams from the Nick Saban era would be able to beat the team this year.
Oh yeah.
Let someone else get a shot here. It's a two-loss team. They don't deserve to be able to stagger into the playoffs just on their name alone. Just on their name alone. They're not one of the top four teams.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that a team has gone into the playoffs based off of name alone. I mean, in particular, if anybody can remember when Penn State, I believe it was Penn State that got left out a few years ago over Ohio State, despite having beaten both Ohio State and also having won the Big Ten title, but they got left out. They got left out because they had two losses instead of Ohio State, who had just one loss, with Penn State being that one loss.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember Jim mentioning something in the Whispers group about that.
Yeah. And, you know, here's the thing that I'll say. It doesn't matter what your record is. I'm sorry, but nobody is going to tune in to the college football playoff to watch USC or TCU.
No.
At this point in the football season, all the network cares about is ratings. They want the highest rating possible. And I'm sorry. You know, if you're a college football fan, are you going to want TCU or USC or are you going to want Alabama?
I'll take USC.
I don't know if I would take USC after how they choked that game away in the second half.
Yeah.
I mean, it was basically...
I don't like the setup that they have right now. It's just, it's a popularity contest. There should be a better, more concrete black and white way to just say, okay,
right.
These people are in. You know what? Now let's let them slide them in. Like, it shouldn't be a bunch of random. I know it's not random people, but it shouldn't be a bunch of commissioners or athletic directors or writers. So I mean, there's got to be a better way to just. I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but it's unfair to whoever's on the outside looking in. You mentioned a couple years ago, Steve, Penn State, what? I didn't even think about that. They beat Ohio State, and then Ohio State got in over them. Absolutely not fair.
Yeah, all because Ohio State had one loss and Penn State had two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely horrendous. That's horrendous. There's got to be a more surefire way to get this thing handled than randomly, like, you know, you know what, let's get them in. And then the other team's going, why not us?
Yeah.
Hey, Steve.
Random, it's a random.
Yeah,
I'm gonna. I'll be back. Okay.
All right, JB. Yeah, it's just flat out ridiculous. However, it looks like there may be help on the horizon. In particular, in 2024, the college football playoff will reportedly expand. They will expand to 12 teams starting with the 2024 season. And let's see. So wait a minute. Yeah, it said in September they had voted to start the 12-team playoff deal in 2026, though they had left it open the possibility of moving it up to 2024 or 2025. But now it looks like the 2024 start is official. So here's how it would happen. The 2024 first round will happen the week ending Saturday, December 21st at the home field of the higher seed or at another site determined by the higher seed. Specific game dates will be announced later. The matchups would be number 12 at number 5, number 11 at number 6, number 10 at number 7, and number 9 at number 8. For 2024 and 2025, the quarterfinal rounds and semifinal games will be played at rotated bowls. So, for the quarterfinals, starting with 2024, the quarterfinals would be played at the Fiesta Bowl, the Peach Bowl, the Rose Bowl, and the Sugar Bowl. The semifinals would be at the Cotton Bowl and the Orange Bowl. Now, for the quarterfinals in 2025, those would be at the Cotton Bowl, Orange Bowl, Rose Bowl, and Sugar Bowl, while the semifinals would be at the Fiesta Bowl and the Peach Bowl.
Yeah.
As far as the title game goes, in 2024, that would be played in Atlanta for 2024. And in 2025, it will be played, or technically 2025, 2026. 2026, it would be played in Miami. So here's how it will go. The expanded 12-team playoff will be made up of the 6 conference champions ranked highest by the committee. No minimum ranking requirement necessary. And the 6 highest-ranked teams not among the conference champions. The 4 highest-ranked conference champions would be seeded number 1 through 4 and would receive first-round byes. The other 8 seeds would then play in the first round. So basically, if we're looking at the college football playoff right now and where everybody is ranked, Georgia would be in, Michigan would be in. Assuming TCU and USC wouldn't fall that far down, they would probably be in. Ohio State and Alabama would be in. Tennessee, Penn State, Clemson, Kansas State, and Utah, and Washington as well. So those 12 teams would all be in right now.
Wow.
If it would fall under that format. So, I mean, let's start off with Lou. Lou, what are your thoughts on the extended NCAA college football playoff? Do you think it's good for the sport?
Well, if you don't go anywhere below 12 teams, yes, because then it gets watered down. So 12, you know, I think is a legit number. Gee, I wonder what Nick Saban's saying now, since he's a few years too late. Oh boy. But it does. More teams bring in more competitive, more money to the schools and whatnot, maybe some more competitive matchups. So, yeah, I think it is good for the game, you know, if you're putting it at that level. But if you go any further than that, then it's gonna be, like, mismatches. So 12 is fine.
Yeah, Alex, what are your thoughts on it?
Completely agree with Lou. I think more is better.
Right.
Maybe shorten the season a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, we're not talking to, like, 90 teams or 100 teams. I mean, 12 is a good – what was it, 12 is the number?
Shorten the season, shorten baseball.
Yeah, 12 teams.
I think that's great. Then you get teams like TCU or Penn State a few years back that have a magical team that they deserve a shot. They're not from the big three or four brand-name programs, but – every year there's a couple schools that deserve it. Then, like a USC this year had a pretty damn good year. Yeah, then you get 12 really, really good teams. It's not really watered down.
Up until last night.
12 is a good amount. Yeah, exactly. But 12 is a good amount for any sport in any league. That's a good playoff run right there.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, another thing, too, is it would actually make some of the bowl games more meaningful. Like, it would be meaningful
right.
to actually be in a bowl game as opposed to, oh, okay, you know, there are certain bowl games where you don't even see them play their start. You don't even see them play certain starters, you know, because certain starters are going into the NFL draft. So, hell, we're not in the playoff. So let's just sit out a lot of our players that we would normally play. Now, this will force teams to continue to keep their players in playing shape and,
mm-hmm.
you know, actually make bowl games more meaningful for at least those top 12 teams.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a good – I really like the idea of the 12 teams a lot more than what we presently have.
Yeah.
Until
it's
the
definitely,
next thing you're talking about –
Huh?
Until the next thing they complain about.
I was just going to say, I'm back.
Okay.
All right. Well, JB, what are your thoughts on the new 12 team format that's going to start for the college football playoff in 2024?
I think I posted. Back when Jim posted, I forget when it was. I am against the 12 team format.
Uh-huh.
I probably would go with maybe 6 teams or 8 teams. I wouldn't go as far as 12. 12 teams.
No.
12 teams, you're going to get it's all according to how they do it too. You know, are they going to go by the, winners of, each division and stuff, or are they going to go by, win loss record? We don't
know.
Well,
what they're doing. What they're doing, this is according to the NCAA officially, it would be made up of the 6 conference champions that are ranked the highest by the committee, and the other six teams would be the six highest ranked teams not among the conference champions.
Okay.
So yeah. Basically the six highest conference champions would be part of the college football playoff.
To me, I'm going against
Wenger.
I'm going against everybody on here. Me, I think that's 12 is too many teams. I still think six or eight is a good number. You know, in my opinion, that's the way I'm thinking.
Well, I mean, it would kind of make sense if it were six or eight, because I mean, we see the NBA, you know, before they did the play-in tournament, the NBA would have a conference have the top eight seeds make the playoffs. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they would expand it to six or eight. But you know, like I said earlier, the 12 bringing in 12 teams, it kind of basically makes bowl games more meaningful now, because now, you know, you're not going to have bowl games that are going to be like, oh, well, you know, we're not in the college football playoff, so, you know, let's just sit most of our players that would normally play, because they're going to be, you know, they're going to be going into the NFL draft and they don't want to potentially get injured. So let's sit some of our players that don't want to play in the bowl game.
Right.
When instead,
yeah.
if
it does go to 12, you know, I do agree with, all the other guys said, it does, we wouldn't just see the, top teams. We would get a more diverse, we would see, a lot more, teams, that get a chance.
Yeah, like if you see, like, for example, last year, the Cincinnati Bearcats and the Iowa Hawkeyes, who, had just incredible seasons. And I believe they ended up missing out on the college, or was it, did they make the college football playoff last year?
I think it was not last year. The other year, Cincinnati was like 12-0 or something like that.
Cincinnati.
They were undefeated.
Yeah, they were 13. They were 13-1.
13-1. Yes.
Wait a minute. Hang on. No, they were 13-0, and they had made the college football playoff before losing in the college football playoff. It was Alabama, Michigan, Georgia, and Cincinnati.
Cincinnati played Georgia.
So, if this 12 team format was in effect last year, you would have seen Notre Dame, Ohio State, Baylor, Ole Miss, Oklahoma State, Michigan State, Utah, and Pittsburgh all make the college football playoff.
Yeah, and even I mentioned, I didn't think that the only reason UC was ranked so high was, number one, because of their record, and number two, mainly because they beat Notre Dame like about, what, the fifth, it was like the fifth game of the season or something like that, and UC was ranked way down there, or they weren't ranked, and they'd be the fifth-ranked Notre Dame team. And I really didn't think that UC deserved to be in the college football, playoffs. But even Jim said,
a lot of these teams, you know, they go by, you know, what these teams' records are.
Yeah, they go by either record or they go by, you know, who would be, like I said, ratings play a huge factor in terms of seedings. Or not seedings, but, you know, who ultimately makes the college football playoff over the other. So, that's why I think Alabama and Ohio State will make it over TCU and USC.
Yeah.
So I do think out of the two teams, I think TCU has the best opportunity to stay, considering the fact that they lost a slim margin as opposed to USC, who had a gigantic lead, and then they decided to take the entire second half off and end up losing the way they did. So, anyways, though, we have some MLB news to talk about. In particular, we have a couple of signings, and the biggest one is Jacob DeGrom leaving the New York Mets to sign a 5-year deal worth $185
million
with a 6-year option that could take the total to $222 million. Also contains a full no-trade clause with the Texas Rangers. You're giving a 6-year deal to a guy who's 34 years old, and he's been limited to just 26 starts the last 2 years.
That's the key right there, the amount of starts. And I'm a big Mets fan, and I love DeGrom, but he took the money. He's not chasing a pennant in Texas, from what I can see. But that's an insane amount of money. I don't even know if I can fault him. I'm not really – obviously not happy with it, but – He was breaking down left and right, and then he came back and really wasn't good when they did their huge nosedive last year, and then he wakes up and leaves for the Rangers. So it's like, it's pretty disheartening. That's a ton of money, though. I mean, the Rangers have to vastly overpay to try to be competitive. So, crazy contract.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just insane because, I mean, clearly he's the best option in their rotation now with John Gray, Martin Perez, and Jake Odorizzi. He's clearly the number one option in their rotation now. But, I mean, a guy who's been limited to because of injuries the last 2 years, he's 34 years old, and you're signing him to a 5-year deal that'll take him to 30. You don't even know if his skills are even going to hold up.
Yeah.
I mean, there's players like Justin Verlander who are winning Cy Young awards at the age of 39 and are looking for 3-year deals in free agency to play until they're 42. But you don't really see those type of players all that often. And DeGrom, I mean, DeGrom was the best option, you know, easily the best option for the Mets, even when he was injured. But come on, you know, how much longer can you really expect DeGrom to pitch at the level he's pitching at?
2 years, 3 years.
And also the fact that you're giving out yet another huge contract just to finish in next to last place in your division again.
Well, they got to really overpay to try to get someone like DeGrom. It's amazing the Mets have none of those big Matt, Wheeler, Syndergaard, DeGrom, Harvey, the big five. They're all gone. It all went up in smoke.
Wow. Yeah. And as for the Mets, you know, this is a huge loss for the Mets to lose DeGrom.
Yes.
Because now, you know, they've basically lost their ace. essentially. I mean, yeah, they can obviously move on to Scherzer as their new ace, but that New York rotation has taken a pretty huge hit with this news today, or whenever it was.
Yeah.
But,
totally.
I guess the
Mets are probably just going to get Verlander, and like, he's 40. So it's like, Jesus, now they have two old mercenaries, Scherzer and Verlander. I mean, whatever. That's very disheartening.
Yeah, it
but
looks
DeGrom
like Verlander will be the next. Verlander is probably going to be their next option, from what it sounds like.
Yeah, and I like him, but he's 40, so you know. But I mean, he's less injury.
He will. Yeah, that's true too. 40.
But he's still good. But he's, you know, I don't know. They're both.
He did just win a Cy Young this year.
Yeah, well, I like the move. It's just DeGrom. I like the homegrown, but you know, those dreams are over. A lot of the athletes now move around. But, you know, it's like very rare to find someone who stays their whole career with one organization. The sad reality of professional sports now.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to add as well, the Mets are in on Carlos Rodon as well.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So
well, if they go,
that's
if
another
they get both
potential
of them,
option.
I wonder if they could get both of them. I don't know.
However, though, not only are the Mets in on Rodon, but also New York, or the Yankees, San Francisco, the Dodgers, and Texas, as well as the Orioles, are also in on Rodon as well. There's a lot of competition. And also, maybe a little bit of news here, potentially. If you're a Yankee fan, I kind of feel sorry for you right now. Aaron Judge has reportedly removed all mentions of the Yankees
from all of his social media
accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And from what it sounds like, according to an MLB insider, he will sign a 9-year deal in free agency with whichever team it is.
Oh, boy.
It'll likely be a 9-year guaranteed contract. As he's currently engaged in contract discussions with both the Yankees as well as the Giants. So, also the LA Dodgers are apparently also interested, but they only want to sign him to a short-term deal, apparently. So, which could be around the range of what Max Scherzer had signed with the Mets last year, the 3-year, $130 million contract that Scherzer had signed. Judge, according to ESPN earlier this week, he had been offered an 8-year contract in the range of $300 million, and it sounds like that may have come from the Yankees.
Wow.
So the fact that he has removed all Yankee mentions from his social media accounts, that does not sound good for Yankee fans.
No, it doesn't.
Wow.
Could be nothing. It could be nothing, but it could also be something.
All right, so let's not assume then.
Yeah. It ain't over till it's over. Hopefully it doesn't follow
right.
DeGrom's footsteps of just chasing that money.
Yeah.
I mean, either way, their grandparents and their grandsons and daughters are going to be set with the money they make. I mean, you know what I'm saying. DeGrom, it's like he would have lived comfortably in New York.
Yeah.
So would Judge. But, yeah, you're not going to win a World Series as a Giant or as a Texas Ranger. That's what I said.
No.
Yeah.
However, though, the Giants are also heavily involved in not just Aaron Judge, but they are also heavily involved in talks with Kodai Senga as well, coming over from Japan.
Oh, yeah.
So it sounds like the Giants are ready to make some major moves this offseason. So I'm assuming that Judge would not be the only big name that they would land.
Yeah.
If they do land him.
Judge would make a huge impact anywhere he goes, of course, best hitter in baseball. But like we've touched upon a couple weeks ago on the show, I mean, that lineup with or without him, that Giants lineup is weak. I mean, one player is not going to make a huge – it's not going to – he'll make him a good lineup. It's not like, oh, my God. Look at the Padres lineup. It's so much better than them. With or without Judge, much better lineup than San Francisco. And then you got the Dodgers.
Well, yeah.
That's just in the division. Dodgers and Padres. Far superior lineup, with or without Judge, with or without him. So, I don't know. I don't think he's winning a ring in San Fran, but yeah, I hope he stays in New York, even as a Mets fan. I mean, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Also earlier this week, the Boston Red Sox, they have signed former LA Dodger reliever Chris Martin to a 2-year deal. It will be worth about $17.5 million. He'll be 37 in June. Let's see.
Which is
last
almost
old
Asian baseball.
Yeah, but he's still a pretty effective reliever. I mean, when you take into account how bad the Red Sox bullpen was last year, Chris Martin is actually considered an upgrade. So, you know, that's kind of saying something. If he's considered an upgrade, that basically means that your bullpen was kind of pathetic. But last year for the LA Dodgers, he went 4-1 with a 3.05 ERA. In his career out of the bullpen, he's 9-16 with a 3.84 ERA, and he was considered to be among the elite in pitchers, 94th percentile when it came to fastballs. So he still has something left in the tank. And obviously, you know, he had a bad year with Chicago last year. He went 1-0 with Chicago with a 4.31 ERA, but he turned things around after being traded to the Dodgers, where he went 3-1 with a 1.46 ERA through a combined 56 innings between both clubs. So he's still effective as a reliever. And honestly would be considered an upgrade over anybody in that Boston bullpen, which is sad to say, but very, very true.
Steve, on the Red Sox front, any quick update on any updates on Bogaerts?
It looks like when it comes to Bogaerts, many insiders seem to believe that he will ultimately re-sign with Boston. However, it looks like he is set to meet with the Philadelphia Phillies at some point before the winter meetings take place next week.
Right.
From what it sounds like Bogaerts is projected to make a deal approaching or exceeding $200 million, according to Ken Rosenthal. The Padres are reportedly interested in him, as are the Phillies, the Yankees, and the Dodgers.
The Padres are not everyone, huh? Maybe he can bat eighth for the – I mean, they have about five all-star shortstops.
Yeah, and if he signs with the Padres, it would likely be a position change. Because the Padres reportedly, when the Padres contacted his agent this week, they asked Boris if he would be willing to switch positions.
Wow. Absurd.
They
have the biggest payroll, right? They have to have the highest payroll, right?
You know what? Let me take a look at that, actually. Let's see. Who would have it? SpotTrack would probably have it. Let's see. Salary rankings. Here we go. No, I want a team, not by player. Team payrolls. Here we go. Okay. So atop the list as of now are the New York Mets at $164 million. Wait a minute.
With about 25.
$164 million actually right now.
They're in tough shape, with Nemo. The Mets are in tough shape. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, with 33 players on the roster.
Wow.
Next are the New York Yankees with 39 players on the roster. The Yankees have a payroll of $162 million. Where are the Padres? The Padres are number 10 with 34 players at $128 million. Oh, and they have salary retention, too, because of the Eric Hosmer trade. So they're retaining Eric Hosmer's salary as well.
Right.
So let's see. Okay, the teams that are currently above the league average, you have the Mets in order. You have the Mets, the Yankees, the Braves, the Angels, the White Sox, the Astros, the Rangers. And keep in mind, the Rangers are doing all this just to finish in dead last again. The Phillies, the Rockies, the Padres, the Blue Jays, the Cardinals, Dodgers, Giants, Tigers, and then Mariners. But then you get to the league average. And then below the league average, you have the Cubs, the Red Sox, the Diamondbacks, the Nationals, the Twins, the Reds, the Marlins, the Brewers, the Rays, the Royals, the Pirates, the Guardians, the Orioles, and then the Athletics, who currently do not have a payroll, apparently.
How do you not have a payroll?
Because everybody is in either arbitration or they're in pre-arbitration.
Ah. Okay, now I get it. I mean, I thought every team had to have a payroll.
Their projected payroll is only $50 million.
Ah, the cheapskate plan.
The Groupon.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Fred Coupon.
Right. Wilpon.
So needless to say, the Padres, despite all of their moves that they've made, they're still not the top team when it comes to payroll amounts.
No.
There's still 9 other teams above them. But I could kind of see if they were to go after Bogarts, it would be insurance for if they can't hold on to Soto. That's what it sounds like to me. But I think it's even worse for Boston, though, because if they lose Bogarts, it's almost guaranteed that they're going to lose Devers. Devers is not going to stay if Bogarts leaves.
Suddenly, Boston is suddenly a small market team. Who would have thunk? Shane Bloom.
Yeah. All because John Henry would rather focus on soccer or hockey than focus on the team that made him all that money.
Yeah, it's a disgrace.
By the way, this just in, Washington goaltender Darcy Kemper pulled in the second period due to concussion protocol.
Okay.
So Charlie Lindgren now replaces Darcy Kemper in net for the Washington Capitals, down 2-1.
I see.
And also, the Clemson Tigers are your ACC champions with a 39-10 victory over the North Carolina Tar Heels.
Yeah. I didn't think Carolina was going to pull it off.
Yeah.
And right now it seems pretty damn certain that Michigan will hold on to beat Purdue. They're currently up 36-19, so.
Still a ways to go, but still, I think they're going
to. Still a ways to go, but Michigan will probably hold on there.
Right.
Let's see. We do have some news about Yasiel Puig. Apparently, he has withdrawn his agreement that he would plead guilty in connection with an illegal gambling ring. So he has withdrawn that, saying that, "I want to clear my name. I never should have agreed to plead guilty to a crime I did not commit." And Puig's attorney told the LA Times, his attorney told the LA Times that significant new evidence has led to a change in approach to the case. And the belief of the defense is that Puig might have been entrapped.
Talk about another head case.
If true, it could cause him to be innocent potentially, because of the way that investigators went after him. It wouldn't be innocent, but it would be a mistrial, I think.
Yeah.
Because of how investigators went after him. He is expected to stand trial on January 10th in U.S. District Court. Obviously, he's been charged with making false statements in a federal investigation of an illegal sports betting operation. He is now expected to plead not guilty, and still, though, if convicted at trial, he could face a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison, it says here, which would effectively end any possibility that he would possibly try to make a major league return. Earlier this week, the Tampa Bay Rays, they agreed to a deal with right-hander Zach Eflin on the largest free agent deal made with the Tampa Bay Rays in Tampa Bay history. 3 years, $40 million. That's literally, no joke, that's literally the largest free agent deal in their entire franchise history that they have signed. So they have been cheapskates for years, essentially.
Yes.
But Eflin transitioned to a relief role later last season with the Philadelphia Phillies after he missed a significant chunk of time due to a right knee injury, and he ended up finishing with a 4.04 ERA across 75 and two-thirds innings, 20 appearances, 13 of them were starts. He declined a $15 million option last month to return to Philadelphia and now has managed to secure a long-term deal from the Tampa Bay Rays. Also, according to ESPN's Jeff Passan, Matthew Boyd is in agreement on a contract with the Detroit Tigers. It'll be a one-year, $10 million deal. He left Detroit last offseason for a one-year, $5.2 million deal with the Giants before he then got flipped to the Seattle Mariners at the trade deadline. He wound up logging only 13 and a third total innings this year, though the results were relatively promising when he was actually healthy. Now he returns to a Tigers team that's aiming to bolster their pitching depth in an effort to move a little closer to title contention in 2023. And indications are that Matthew Boyd will be used as a starter moving forward. But needless to say, I wouldn't expect them to be anywhere near contention for quite some time. So, a little bit of shocking news in the NHL. Star Pittsburgh Penguins defenseman Chris Letang has suffered a stroke, and he will now be off the ice indefinitely, according to general manager Ron Hextall. He was diagnosed with the stroke on Monday after suffering symptoms. The news was considered shocking, but the player is currently in good spirits. They thanked the medical staff and team and the physicians at the UPMC hospital. Letang had previously suffered a stroke back in 2014, and he missed over 2 months of that season as a result. So now for the foreseeable future, he has been ruled out of Penguins games, and who knows if he will even return this season.
I would say lucky not.
Before, he played in 21 games, logging one goal and 11 assists. In his career, he's made two All-Star teams, and he has won the Stanley Cup twice, both with the Pittsburgh Penguins. And also, in this week's bullshit alert, Fox Sports' Jay Glazer has reported that the Jets won't start Zach Wilson until he regains his confidence. Glazer claims
that did take a while.
Glazer claims that Wilson's loss of confidence has led to myriad mechanical issues, including footwork that has led to poor throws throughout the season. No, he just sucks.
Including not being able to throw a spiral.
Not a lack of confidence. It's not a lack of confidence. He just sucks.
He just sucks.
He was good one season at BYU with no crowd in the stadium.
Yeah.
he sucks.
Jets head coach Robert Saleh has said this week that the team would work with Wilson to improve his mechanics, and NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reported on Wednesday that Wilson has struggled with the yips since the spring. And from the fact that he's still trying to perfect the most basic functions of an NFL signal caller, it's probably not going to be a short-term issue. So it sounds like for now, Mike White will probably retain the starting gig for the foreseeable future. And I mean, Mike White played a hell of a lot better than Zach Wilson ever did.
He's legit, and they have weapons. They have a really good defense. He's the answer. Zach Wilson's done in New York.
Yeah. And here's the thing, too. It's not even, Wilson is completely benched, period. Like, he won't even dress for games.
Yeah.
He's benched, period.
And he should be.
Like
I said, this
the locker room, the locker room didn't like him. He's immature. I mean, there's no signs pointing to him getting that job back in New York.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no reason to believe that he would even, get to be a starter once again, especially with the way he has carried himself as a member of the Jets.
Totally agree.
Also, according to Fox Sports' Andy Slater, Odell Beckham Jr. was kicked off of a flight from Miami to L.A. last Sunday. And according to – he was booted from the flight after he was seen in and out of consciousness, and he wouldn't put on his seatbelt, according to Slater.
Yeah.
Flight attendants had reportedly feared that that Odell Beckham Jr. was seriously ill. All of the passengers had to deboard the plane. And also, basically, it was said that he refused to leave the plane. And he ended up buckling himself because he claims that he fell asleep. And he fell asleep
right
before takeoff. And normally, passengers are given the opportunity to buckle their seatbelts if they're just asked to do so. He claims that they never asked him anything. They literally just woke him up and tell him, get the fuck off of the plane.
Yeah, that's what happened to Odell. We believe you, Odell.
Yeah.
So, it is notable he was not detained or arrested as a result of the of the incident, though. So, just didn't make the flight, and he ended up taking a private jet anyways to wherever he was going. So. Just a little bit of basketball news. According to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, the Boston Celtics and Al Horford have agreed on a 2-year extension worth about $20 million. Horford is in the final season of his current contract, so the agreement will keep him from hitting free agency. He'll be 39 years old at the end of the extension, so there is a real possibility that this contract will be Horford's last contract in the NBA. He has been a key player for the Boston Celtics in both of his stints with the franchise, and this season his presence has helped Boston navigate the absence of Robert Williams, who's been out with knee surgery without much trouble. And speaking of Robert Williams, he is on the road to recovery, and as a matter of fact, he has started playing scrimmages. So it sounds like maybe perhaps that Christmas Day trajectory may not be that far off for him to return.
That's huge.
Yeah, that's going to be huge for a team that is currently still leading the NBA right now.
They're going to get a ring. They're going to get a ring this year or next year. They're ready.
Yeah.
I really think so.
An 18 and 5 record, and they ended up narrowly losing to the Miami Heat last night just because they can't win a single game in overtime to save their lives. That's literally the only reason why they lost. And also Jimmy Butler was playing out of his mind last night with some of the shots that he was putting up.
It sure was.
And also, Jason Tatum had an off night, so that didn't help things either. However, Jaylen Brown shot out of his mind, too, including shooting a Steph Curry-like shot from 30 feet out. That actually may have been a fade three-point attempt, too. I have to rewatch that, but it may have been a fade that he had shot. Boston is expected to be, or they're scheduled to play Brooklyn tomorrow night.
Yeah.
As Brooklyn looks to improve to 5 straight wins, while Boston looks to recover from that overtime loss to the Miami Heat. I will say this, with Jimmy Butler back, Miami's prospects are looking pretty good moving forward. As it's very clear, based off of last night's game, that they play a hell of a lot better with Jimmy Butler in the lineup than – well, not just in the lineup, but when Jimmy Butler's on the floor than when he's on the bench. And it's not just playing better in terms of him. It's playing better like other players are actually improved by him just being on the floor. Let's see.
Yeah.
We also do have, according to Jason Mackey of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Brian Reynolds, star outfielder Brian Reynolds, has requested a trade for Pirates. However, it's been added that the Pirates aren't immediately moving to facilitate a deal of any sort. Reynolds has been at the epicenter of trade rumors the last few seasons, and it's possible he could be jettisoned during the upcoming winter meetings, which are scheduled beginning tomorrow in San Diego. The 27-year-old outfielder, who remains arbitration eligible for two additional seasons before reaching free agency in 2026, batted a robust 262 batting average with a career-high 27 homers and 7 stolen bases with Pittsburgh.
Wow. Yeah, he's a great player.
Yeah.
And also one other note, the Orioles and free agent right-hander Kyle Gibson have agreed to a one-year deal. Gibson wasn't really much to write home about for Philadelphia last year, a pedestrian 5.05 ERA across 167 and two-thirds innings through 31 starts. So not really much to write home about with him. But
no.
That is, though, going to end it for us tonight. We have about just 2 minutes left. So I just want to give a quick reminder to any Survivor fan. Thursday night, the Survivor 43 recap show at 9 o'clock Eastern on blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE. If you haven't done so yet, subscribe to the Missy AE show by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE. You can find us on iTunes, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and I'm sure there's other ones that I'm forgetting right now, but at this point, I don't even know. My mind is elsewhere at this point. Thank you to Lou. Thank you to Diane. Alex, and thank you to JB for joining me tonight. We will be back next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. Everybody have a good rest of your weekend, and we will see you guys Saturday night.
Good night, guys.
And see you, Lou. See you, Alex.
See you, guys. Thanks.
Yeah. Have a good night, everybody.
Okay. All right.